start from scratch here, sorry. All right, so now I'd like to welcome to the podium Tracy Keenan from Applied Survey Research in Santa Cruz, or Watsonville, and who's going to talk about a project they're doing to measure youth alcohol and other drug use in Santa Cruz County, California.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here today. Like Maureen said, my name is Tracy Keenan. I'm from Applied Survey Research. We have offices in Watsonville, which is in Santa Cruz County, and then also in San Jose and Santa Clara County up north. So today I'll be talking to you about Project CURB, which was a grant funded through the State Incentive Grant in California. Specifically in Santa Cruz County, we were focused on reducing binge drinking among underage youth, and we specified those youth being 16 to 20-year-olds. So specifically today, I'm going to talk about youth-involved research in that project. This was about alcohol, but you can use these strategies really for other drugs as well. So again, I have no financial relationships to disclose. Today, I'll be talking just briefly through the Project CURB theory of change, the needs assessment that we conducted, which sort of led us into designing this youth-led survey. So, and then speaking about that survey implementation methodology, some of the limitations, lesson learns, and then just some of the cool data highlights. So Project CURB, to give you some background, utilized environmental prevention strategies. And those strategies serve to promote policy and procedural changes that inhibit youth access to alcohol, as well as alter the community perceptions and social norms around youth drinking. So really focusing here on community attitudes, social norms, and then youth access. As a first step, we conducted a needs assessment, created this very large secondary data report to determine what data we had, what data we needed to gather, and we really found sort of a lack of comprehensive data specifically around the youth we wanted to serve. So specifically, the California Health Interview Survey, CHIS, if you guys are familiar with any of the surveys locally in California, data really doesn't come till 2 years after the survey has been conducted, so it doesn't really measure, in a timely manner at least, what we wanted to measure. California Healthy Kids Survey is a survey conducted on the public schools in California in 5th, 7th, 9th, and 11th grades. So that didn't really capture all the youth in our target population, those 16 to 20-year-olds. We wanted youth in community college, in universities, in private schools, youth who weren't in school. And then it didn't really ask some of the key questions that we wanted to know about, specifically around access, location of drinking, and then some of those social norms and attitudes and perceptions around alcohol. So our solution was to conduct our own youth survey, and we were lucky enough to have funding through the SIG grant to do so. And we really wanted to do the survey in a way that engaged youth, engaged the people who were behaving or engaging in those behaviors to sort of gather the information and sort of lead our process. So the survey development, we reviewed a lot of the existing surveys that were out there with the California Healthy Kids, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. We wanted to capture some questions that we could compare statewide and even nationally. But we also developed some of our own survey questions as well, and we engaged youth in reviewing that. We piloted the survey once it was completed with youth to really get feedback and involve youth in that beginning process as well. And then we wanted to engage youth in not only the piloting and development of the survey, but administering the survey as well. So the interviewer recruitment process for the youth survey was key to really getting a broad spectrum of youth for this survey. So what we did was devise this extremely extensive a recruitment plan. So we looked at, okay, we have this many high schools throughout our county, we have this many private schools, we have a university, we have some community colleges, and then we also want to get youth who aren't necessarily being accessed through those traditional survey methods, youth who are homeless, GLBTQ youth, youth not in schools. So we really said, okay, how many youth do we need from this school? How many youth do we need who aren't in school? And reached out to all of our community partners really extensively and had a very long and tedious recruitment process. But we were really successful in getting a diverse population of youth who are 16 to 20, so who were in our target population of our interventions, and then who represented the high schools, colleges, alternative schools, private schools, youth not in school throughout our county. So really attempting to be as representative as possible. And by that, using that sort of diverse and representative method, we were able to basically say, just go find your friends and take the survey, which made it a little more simple and then also safer for the youth. They didn't have to go find, ask people they didn't know to take the survey. We required parental consent for the interviewers to be involved in the process, and then we required them to attend a two-hour training. And that training included explaining the project purpose, so why are we doing this, some of the background, stress that this was a job, they were going to get paid for this, so you know, emphasizing to treat this with responsibility and respect. And then reviewed the procedures of and the survey instrument. How do you conduct a survey? What are some of the questions going through the scales if in case any youth ask them any questions? Reviewing the safety and courtesy protocol, which I'll discuss in a moment, and then the drop-off procedures, which were quite extensive as well. So some of those safety protocol, I'm sure you can imagine, conduct the survey in a safe location. So we really emphasize being a well-lit place, somewhere where you can get out of it in case anything else happens, have adults nearby, approach individuals cautiously, introduce yourself, explain what you're doing. And then also a big key here was they had to ask if the person had already been surveyed. We didn't want duplicates. Let the respondent set the pace of the survey. Don't rush them. Allow them to take the time they need. Never push them to complete the survey at that time. If they wanted to talk it over with their family, if they wanted to come back at another time, we allowed them to do that. Be courteous, respectful. We gave them a movie pass. They were told at the beginning the survey respondents were going to receive a movie pass for taking the survey. Referred them to a teen hotline if they had any concerns about alcohol or the survey brought up any issues. So we attached a little movie pass, or to the movie pass, we attached the hotline, the teen hotline number. And then I'll, again, just emphasize that safety comes first. And just to let you know, we never had any problems in terms of safety with our survey interviewers. So the implementation of the survey, in terms of procedures, The recruitment of a diverse population sort of and those who were in our target group allowed them to basically go to their friends. So the recruitment for participants in the survey was based on age, 16 to 20, and then residence in Santa Cruz County. Again, we emphasized where and when to conduct the survey. We asked them not to conduct the survey during school hours. We didn't want teachers to get mad at us. And then we had a very specific survey script that sort of went through the instructions on how to conduct that survey with the youth, introduce the survey, and then the procedures. So what the procedure ended up being was the interviewer would take the survey to one of their friends or someone who they wanted to take, who wanted them to take the survey. They read their script. If the person said, no, I haven't taken this survey before, yes, I'm interested, they gave them an informed consent form. So we didn't get parent permission, but we used this informed consent procedure because they were 16 to 20 years old. They read the informed consent, they signed it, they also received a copy of it for themselves. The interviewer gave them the survey. We asked the interviewer to stand aside, don't hover over the person while they took it. The person would fill out the survey. We gave them an envelope also with that survey. When the person taking the survey, the respondent, was completed with the survey, they would put it in the envelope, seal it, and hand it back to the interviewer in exchange for their movie ticket, movie pass. We really emphasized this envelope procedure to ensure confidentiality, sort of avoid the peer pressure of the person sort of looking over their shoulder or being able to see their responses when the person handed it back. All informed consent forms were kept separate from the surveys. So we also told the interviewers that if we received any surveys back from them in envelopes that weren't sealed, we wouldn't pay them for those surveys. So we're really sort of specific on how we got back the surveys and what they would be paid for. So then the person would take the survey, like I said, and the interviewers were paid for, they were paid $10 in this case per survey that was filled out. In both years, we had about 400 surveys. We went through an extensive IRB approval process, just to let you know, we went through, it was very extensive, and we got approval. So some of the limitations around this was that it wasn't a random sample, so we can't necessarily say it's generalizable, but we really tried to mitigate that by that, you know, very extensive recruitment process of the youth to get as wide a representative a sample from the county as we could. Again, it's self-report data, but again, we really emphasize those confidentiality procedures, and then our theory of having a peer interviewer, that if an adult would come up to a youth and say, can you fill out this survey for me about your alcohol behaviors, there might be a different response than if one of their friends said, hey, I'm not going to look at you, but can you take this survey and be as honest as possible? So our sort of theory around that peer influence. And then the payment procedures, we changed the procedure from the first year and the second in terms of how we paid the interviewers. In the first year, we would provide them with a check after we'd received everything and sort of checked all of their responses. We had a very extensive drop-off procedure in which we would check every survey to make sure, okay, they're in the right age range, they're in the county. And while we did that in the second year, we changed it to just pay cash on the spot. The checks we found didn't work in terms of timeliness, and then also some of the youth in our county had problems in terms of documentation, and so we didn't want to put kids in an awkward position with that. We just wanted to pay cash. And we found that we took a little bit of survey, a few more surveys than we would have the previous year that we had to throw out, but it really did increase the ease of the process. Another note on payment, we did a similar survey in which the incentive matched the amount that the interviewer were paid, so the kids taking the survey got a little $5 Starbucks card, and then the interviewers received $5 per survey. We found that when they matched and when the incentives basically did equal money rather than like a movie pass, that we got a little less response rate. So that's something interesting we learned there. Some important lessons that having youth involved in the whole process, so survey design to pilot and provide feedback was key. Like I said again and again, the recruitment of the interviewers and obtaining that diverse sample was really important. Just our theory that youth are more likely to be open and honest with their peers, incentives for both the interviewers and the respondents, and the amounts as well sort of could have an influence. And then those confidentiality procedures, using that envelope to really ensure that youth feel that they're protected. So to just give you some of the highlights, some of the data that we found in prevalence of binge drinking. So between 2006 and 2007, from our youth survey, we found that in the past 12 months, 66% in 2006 reported that they binge drank. So that's five or more drinks in 2 hours. And this decreased to 59% in 2007. Another key piece of data in informing our strategies was the location of binge drinking, or of drinking in general, I'm sorry. We really needed this to sort of focus our interventions. 16% of adults, and I should mention we also did an adult survey, telephone survey with 400 adults throughout the county, and found that 16% reported that it is somewhat or very acceptable to allow youth to drink in their homes. In actuality, we found two-thirds of the youth in our 2007 survey, 66%, reported that they drank in their homes. And this could be with or without parental knowledge. We did it by unincorporated area for the sheriff to be involved. He was really interested in bringing the social host ordinance to the county, and so we wanted to provide him with some data. The last piece of data I'll show you is about youth access, and this was another really key important information that helped us focus our strategy. So we had already had in place some really positive interventions going on around retailer access as well as through shoulder tapping. We'd had some RAMA, which is the Responsible Alcohol Merchant Awards, some sting operations, and then we had a Santa Cruz ordinance already in place around shoulder tapping. So we'd been really quite successful in reducing those areas of access. We have 20% in this 2007 survey from those two areas. We had 84% of youth reporting that they received alcohol from adults they know. So that piece of information really helped us focus in on what we needed to do in terms of strategies. Adults they know, that could be parents, siblings, friends. And when we broke it down, we really found that it was those older youth rather than parents. I think it was 7% received it from parents, but still those older adults is really their gateway to alcohol. So to just give you some conclusions and what we're doing now, we conducted a few very well-publicized and attended press conferences sharing the data. In many cases, we had the youth actually present the data and be a part of those press conferences. So again, continuing the youth involvement throughout the entire process. And then we've been really successful in passing social host ordinance through most cities and then entire unincorporated area in our county. We're shooting for entire coverage, and we're really getting close. We have responsible beverage and sales service trainings continuing. We have the media campaign, which really changed through this data to focus on that adult access, and then just continuing those RAMA awards with retailer access. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Tracy. That's great data, and it's great to see such great progress in Santa Cruz. Our next panelists are, we're really excited to have here with us today. As soon as I can figure out how to use a mouse, I'll be in good shape.